This is Nicole Raleigh, web editor for PharmaForum, and I have with me today Dr. David Roggs, specialty lead in neurological disorders at Greater Manchester Clinical Research Network, as well as consultant neurologist at the Salford Royal Foundation Trust. And now, the purpose for our podcast recording today for Kudos in MS, David is the 2023 winner of the Outstanding MS Physician Kudos Recognition Award. So just a little bit of background information further to what I've just given on David. Your service covers the whole of Greater Manchester, and that is an area covering 3 million people. Not only that, but you also advocate for the most disadvantaged people with MS. You ensure that all people with MS in the country have access to the very best in MS care. That's the reason, as far as I'm aware, and it's just amazing what you do, that you set up MS Raising the Bar, which supports, guides and mentors MS services around the country. So David, before we go into the finer details of what you do, can you just tell me how it feels to get recognised for your work by the Kudos in MS programme?
Well, first of all, I would say it's very humbling. Awards are never really for an individual, they're for a team. As you've mentioned, it's not just a team within our service itself in Greater Manchester, but certainly Raising the Bar has gone on to transforming MS for All as an initiative. We audited over 70 centres, MS centres in the UK, and it's very much a collaborative effort. So I'm particularly keen to acknowledge my colleagues, Professor Jeremy Hobart and Jola Matthews, MS pharmacist from Barts, being key members of the Transforming MS team.
So can you describe the specifics of the unmet need that led you to the work that you were nominated for?
Absolutely. So I think we all recognise that there are increasing challenges in delivering services within the NHS, and this was particularly so before COVID, but obviously we've had issues during the COVID pandemic itself and within its aftermath. And those largely relate to lack of staffing and lack of resource. But equally, I don't think necessarily that we utilise the resources that we do have as efficiently as possible. So the three things really to come out of the Transforming MS for All audit were a need to maximise influence for change, maximise operational efficiency, and thirdly, maximise the benefits of routinely collected data in terms of service support and improvement.
Off the back of that, so can you talk me through how you have addressed all this in your work, what exactly you've done in order to address those three things?
Yes. So in terms of maximising influence for change, we've obviously continued as part of the Transforming MS for All programme to engage with a whole variety of external stakeholders. Those are the patient groups, for example, and the charities. Those are the various NHS institutions coming out of NHSE. Those are the professional groups, so the ABN, therapists in MS, the Pharmacy Association and so on. Really, we've been trying to align and identify the programmes that will affect change. And so, for example, NHS England recently have launched a dashboard for neurological services off the back of the Getting It Right First Time, the GERFT initiative, and Transforming MS for All have been able to contribute to that process and are contributing to that process in terms of some MS-specific elements. So that would be the first sort of plank, if you like, in terms of influencing change. In terms of operational efficiency, we have identified 8 projects off the back of the Transforming MS for All audit. And essentially, some of those projects are around defining the roles and responsibilities of the various MS professionals that make up the teams, identifying the fact that different teams have different compositions, and also looking to see how we can expand the number of staff working in MS over time. Because clearly, we're not going to be able to address shortfalls of well over 100 staff in each of the key groups across the UK that we identified in the audit: neurologists, MS nurses, MS coordinators and so on. But what we will be able to do, I think, is to provide more of a platform for people to be able to work more efficiently and at the top of their licence, as one of my colleagues coined the phrase. There's also within that issues around, I think, what are reasonable expectations for patients to have of services, but also I think what reasonable expectations services can have of patients. And so that means, for example, you know, adhering to monitoring protocols, turning up for blood tests, turning up scans, you know, and so on. And whilst the administrative services sometimes sort of let us down a little bit, or the admin within trusts is perhaps not 100% effective, so people think they've cancelled an appointment, but they don't register as a cancellation, for example, and that seems to happen not infrequently. Nevertheless, where people don't turn up for tests, that has a knock-on effect. It has an opportunity cost, literally, in the sense that if a person doesn't turn up for a test, then that disenfranchises another person from being able to attend for that test. It also increases the workload on the service, and I would argue the kind of non-clinical workload, if you like. So those are important factors. In terms of harnessing the benefit of routinely collected data, the two things that we really all contribute to, directly or indirectly, in the health service, in the MS sphere at least, are firstly the blue tech forms, which are the high cost, in England at least, the high cost drug approval online system. So in order to put somebody on a disease modifying treatment, do have to complete a blue tech form, an initial registration, and then a yearly continuation. So that gives us a centralized structure that everyone has to complete. But at the moment, we don't really see the benefits of that. So it's very much an input form rather than actually generating any useful outputs. Colleagues from Nottingham and some other centres during COVID were managed to extract the top line disease modifying treatment prescribing patterns over COVID pandemic and link those to Public Health England outcomes in terms of COVID tests. But what it did do is it gave us the numbers, actually, I think, in the public domain for the first time. So we were able to see in England, for example, what proportion of patients were on each treatment, but also what the growth of those treatments were over a 12-month period. And I think what we've tried to suggest via Transforming MS for All is that this is an opportunity for us actually to understand our prescribing practice, but more importantly, perhaps to benchmark our prescribing practice against other colleagues and other centres. So always you're sort of looking to see really how, whether you're an outlier, whether you're, you know, above average in certain respects, or whether you're perhaps below average in other respects. And I think it's useful to understand that how your practice mirrors that of other colleagues. And then the second data source that everybody contributes to is the hospital episode statistics, the HES data. And the trusts submit this information back to NHS England, who then currently largely pass that data on to other third parties that then effectively kind of sell it back to the NHS. At the moment, we get snapshots of activity, for example, for people within our practice with certain diagnoses, how often they come into hospital, either for the primary diagnosis, in this case, multiple sclerosis, or perhaps a secondary diagnosis such as infections or operations or other things, or infusions, for example. So it's useful actually to understand whether our sort of practice varies in terms of outcomes, varies from other colleagues. In order to make the most of both of those data sets, those routine data sets, there are two things really. The first is linkage. So for example, it would be useful to see if you use more of drug A, then do you get fewer hospital episode statistics with event B. So for example, if you use more of drug A, do you have fewer infections and hospitalizations for event B? And then the second one is providing context. So one of the surprising things is the fact that there isn't really an awful lot of context provided around the information in terms of how the services are organized. So when we did the audit, what we found was that originally we were going to just do a basic questionnaire, and then it became apparent that the MS services are so different and so nuanced in some cases that actually we had to then try and capture that information via interviews. So Jeremy Hobart largely did over 50 interviews, in-depth interviews with colleagues in order to understand how services were configured. And that's provided some very useful information. Really hadn't been done before, certainly not at that scale. And I think that was really fundamental in terms of shaping our approach to how to improve services, which is obviously how we've started this discussion.
Absolutely. I mean, the information you've just provided is shocking, but it's also at the same time what you've been doing incredibly admirable, and what you've been highlighting, seeing the gaps, seeing the necessities. So I wonder, with your endeavours, and there must have been, what were the challenges that you encountered in this work you've been doing, and how did you respond to those challenges?
Well, I think the biggest challenge actually is a lack of resource, you know, in order to do this, and a lack of alignment in terms of the resource that is available within the MS space. So one of the reasons we were able to complete the audit, Jeremy Jola and I, is because apart from obviously the goodwill and the support of colleagues in participating freely, you know, and giving their information, you know, to us so that we could aggregate it, was largely because we did this during lockdown. So, you know, we were basically meeting every week during the lockdown period to try and progress this. I have to say, you know, we found that actually psychologically, I think we found that very helpful because mm-hmm. it gave us a focus, you know, during a very difficult situation. And obviously what we wanted to do was to emerge out of lockdown stronger and perhaps better aligned than we had going into lockdown, which I think we've managed to do. But in retrospect, you know, we wouldn't have been able to complete this audit or indeed as subsequent actions from the audit without actually having that time. And it's certainly become much more difficult since life has, well, normalised, so to speak, in order to be able to carry on doing all of this work, you know, alongside a full-time job. This is where we've obviously been building up the TMS community, and we've now got a leadership group and regional ambassadors, and we've managed to secure funding, and we're starting to sort of develop now the next phase. Because as somebody pointed out to us, you know, what got you here isn't necessarily going to be what sustains you. So we're very much looking at this as a phase two.
So before we go on to those future plans, I just wondered if you'd yet seen, as you must have done, results directly, tangible results for the MS patients and their families. Could you give us some examples?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think what we've wrote up the audit in the form of a short report, and we shared that report widely with the various stakeholders, as I mentioned. So not just with the patient societies and some of the professional groups, but also some of the MS pharmaceutical companies as well. And it's been obvious that whilst we don't have a monopoly on good ideas, and certainly some of the ideas that, you know, may have, you know, come from a variety of sources, nevertheless, we've seen some of the recommendations that we've made in the report actually start to become, you know, embedded within the strategies, if you like, of other organisations. So we've seen that there have been meetings that have been looking to nurture the next generation of MS consultants, for example, to support them in terms of developing business cases, creating new roles, you know, which obviously then will directly benefit, you know, people living with multiple sclerosis. So that's been, I think, been the most tangible outcome. And also, again, as I said, with our discussions with, you know, with NHS England, I think it's been very timely that I think they were looking at developing the more generic dashboards, if you like, you know, off the back of the GERFT initiative. And I think we have been able to positively contribute to some of the outcomes, as I said, you know, in terms of feeding back on practice. Because I think when you can reflect on your own practice, and more importantly, the impacts of your practice, you know, good, bad and indifferent, that then gives you the opportunity then to change your practice. And mm-hmm. I think at the moment that we might be looking at our practice more at kind of individual patient levels rather than at a service level, and certainly not comparing a service approach with, you know, another service approach, particularly if they're not services that are, you know, that are local or contiguous. So the benefit of the dashboard, for example, will be that certainly at an England level, it will be able to do direct comparisons, you know, between one end of the country and the other, for example, and everywhere else in between. I think we've managed to inform the agenda, shall we say, in relation to a number of things and some of the thinking. And as I said, whilst I can't claim that we have a monopoly on that in terms of good ideas and so on, I think we've drawn a lot of thinking and a lot of discussions together into some tangible outcomes.
Definitely. And along that journey, have you received any sort of anecdotal feedback of positivity for what you're doing?
Yeah, good point. So again, colleagues have said that they've used some of the data that we've generated from the report in terms of their business cases. So for example, we identified that on average, there was about a 10% increase in MS caseload in an average service. We've also been able to describe an average service as well, because that really hadn't been something that was determined previously. So in the 70 centres that we identified, the average service is around 1,500 people living with MS. But with the services we surveyed, you know, the smallest service was fewer than 100 people living with MS, up to over 5,500 people living with MS at the time. Colleagues have said that they've used some of the data from the report and the audit to inform their business cases. Interestingly, whilst they've managed to make the financial argument, they haven't necessarily, and this is based on anecdotal feedback, they haven't necessarily managed to appoint people, because sometimes those people aren't available within that locality. And that's a really important point, and it circles back to my point about the fact that even though we identified, you know, hundreds of components the MS team felt were sustainable caseloads, and of course those were different for different colleagues. So for example, for an MS neurologist, we felt that on average 659 people living with MS was a sustainable caseload, but that was for somebody that was fully dedicated to MS, which is very rare in the UK at the moment. Most people have a general neurological practice as well. In terms of things, we've identified obviously that there aren't necessarily the staff to fill the unfilled positions. So therefore we have to work differently. And that may mean that we have to redefine and expand other roles within the team. So for example, I think personally that the role of the administrator with the MS team is probably underdeveloped, certainly at a national level. You know, locally centres have, you know, a good number of administrators, which don't necessarily correlate to their size of caseload, whereas other people have very few or no dedicated administrators, but have large caseloads. So I think in terms of us identifying from the available pool of talent, I suspect that we are going to need to look at more non-clinical, non-nursing administrative support roles in the future to deal with what is essentially an increasingly complex bureaucratic practice. By bureaucracy, I mean all of the forms and the procedures that we have to follow, for example, in relation to reimbursement for and monitoring for high-cost drugs, as an example.
You've brought us round to the future again. So a couple of minutes ago, you mentioned a phase two. So how do you see your work in what you've been doing? How do you see it developing next?
Very much around the projects that we'd identified. So we identified 8 projects under those 3 main themes that I mentioned, you know, maximising influence for change, maximising operational efficiency, working differently, and harnessing the benefits of routinely collected data. So there are 8 projects beyond that. We have soft launched our phase one of our website. So that's the public facing part of the website, the Transforming MS for All website, and that's www.transformingmsforall.org. We're now working on the phase two part of the website, which will be the members section, and that will be looking at essentially sharing best practice and facilitating communication. So there's a number of different elements to that, including a documents repository, service map, and a forum for discussions around sharing best practice and service development, as I mentioned. We're also configuring a meeting in the autumn, again, of the MS Transforming MS for All community, which is going to be focused on updates in terms of where we're at, setting priorities for the future, but also looking at sustainability. So that's been one of our key factors, really, in current climate with finite and increasingly pressurised resource. How do we continue to sustain MS services? And again, I've probably been very focused on the MS services element of this, but obviously if you don't have functional and sustainable MS and quality MS services, then that impacts negatively on outcomes for people living with MS, which is obviously why we're all here. So whilst I focused on services, obviously the patient outcomes are the focus for us, but sometimes the services, I think, get lost in some of the priorities, I think, of, you know, some of the other organisations. So this is where we felt really that we could add the unique selling point and the value.
Definitely a value, David. All right, my last question, takeaway for our listeners. What advice would you give someone else looking to replicate what you've done?
Had thought of this in relation to other subspeciality groups, actually. So, you know, for example, Parkinson's disease, epilepsy, and, you know, and other neurological disorders. But obviously this could be, the Transforming MS initiative actually could be a template for any number of different medical conditions. And I think, as I said, we had a unique opportunity because of lockdown. And also, if I may say, I think, you know, Jeremy and Jola and I think have worked very cohesively together, because I think we've taken the view that the sum is more important than the parts, and the end, you know, the end result is more important than, so we've all put our hands up at various different times to do elements of the work. But I think first and foremost, it can be done. I think it requires an awful lot of effort and coordination, and it will depend. If you wanted to do a national audit, for example, I think the important thing is to get down to the grassroots, to the coalface, where audits have been done previously. So for example, the Royal College of Physicians audit of MS, which was done in the 2000s, there were 3 audits and not an awful lot had changed in between each audit 2 or 3 years later. And again, that was a top-down approach. So I think this was very much a kind of bottom-up approach, really, where we had a number of pre-existing networks, professional networks with MS consultants, MS nurses, pharmacists, and coordinators. And we were able to exploit those pre-existing relationships. So I think that's the way to start this, is very much bottom up, but utilising existing professional networks and then trying to formalise that. But resource is a massive issue. I really would like to see the NHS actually putting some resource back into service development. We spend an awful lot of money on high-cost drugs in this area, and yet there isn't really any resource reinvested into the infrastructure to measure the outcomes of those drugs, and that's really important. So I'd really like to see that. If I had one of the aspects on my wish list, as it were, would be to have a small proportion of the funding that we generate. And obviously with the advent of generic drugs, for example, there will be some cash releasing opportunities. I would like to see some of that reinvested back into services so that we can actually understand the impact of our practice. And again, circling back for the outcomes for patients and for people living with MS. So that's the key, really.
That is the central objective. So thank you so much for your time today, David. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for everything you do. All the best.
Pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.